Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, April 27th. I'm Ray Graff. Here it is, the most exciting hour in your broadcast month. Once again, it is the gardening program on Vox Pop, and we welcome back the Dream Team. Horticulturalist Bob Graves is here from Fadigan's Nursery, gardener Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, and arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. This is the time to call with your very vexing questions about your garden. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 is the number, or you can email the program voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number, jot it down, 800-348-2551. The gardening show begins after the news. Well, I'm ready for the show to start. We've been talking about banjos during the break, so let's get the show underway. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, our live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today to answer your gardening questions, the great ones, Bob Graves, horticulturalist and co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York, Fred Breglia, director of the Landis Arboretum, and Greg Ward, who runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. You may also email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. Bob, Fred, Greg, welcome back to the show.
Hey, great to be
it's
back.
Good to be here.
Yeah,
spring has sprung.
It finally feels like spring.
It is officially here.
Well, I got into the studio here, and before all the banjo talk started, I noticed this thing here, and it says it's a mole plant. Greg Ward, what is this thing?
Well, it is the genus name is Euphorbia, and that covers a lot of bases. Poinsettias are Euphorbias, mm-hmm. just so you know. And it's an interesting plant that we get in our herb selection, used apparently to repel moles, voles, gophers.
You're kidding me.
I don't know what a gopher is, but around here we have
so
moles.
So it repels these things. So
apparently
the Latin is
them.
Molus interruptus.
It could be. Could
nice.
Be. You could definitely change that. To that, it's actually ornamental. It's pretty interesting. Has a very kind of narrow lanceolate leaf. Grows very upright, as you said, about 3 or 4 feet tall.
Well, that's what the card says. Up to well, 4 feet.
I'd like to read the cards.
Here, go ahead.
No, I did already.
Oh, I'm going to put this in the ground, and we'll see.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
Right out front here at the station.
Okay, that would be a great spot.
Yeah.
Yep.
Dig a hole in the cement, and we'll.
No more moles.
So it's just a fun ornamental, and you know there are a lot of really fun plants out there, and it just was something when I saw the mole plant, Ray, I thought of you.
Well, you're very kind.
Well,
you shouldn't eat this.
I'm not
right?
quite sure what that means, Ray.
I'm pretty sure it was a shot.
Mole's pretty funny looking critter.
I'm rolling with it.
You think that's a goblin?
Don't eat it. No.
So don't make a salad out of it.
No, in fact,
in the Euphorbiaceae family, which is you break a leaf and it has a little bit of white sap, that pretty much the it delineates a lot of the family plants of Euphorbiaceae.
Yeah. Kind of irritating.
And they're all poisonous.
Yeah.
Okay,
calcium oxalate or one of those
believe it is.
Kinds of crystals that will make your tongue swell up.
Well, good. Yep. Thank you for giving me a toxic plant. I appreciate it very much. Well, look
that's
at
a
this.
Good one for a host.
Yeah, that's great. Toxic
oh
plant.
My.
Well, we're off the flying stick. Can we talk about banjos for a while?
Back to banjos.
All right. The lines are loaded, and so are the guests. Let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Carry and play. Plainfield, Mass. Carry, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
What I'm calling for is I have a lot of periwinkle growing on my property. And last year I transplanted some of it into a large iron container that I have outside. And I also put in some fountain grass and other ornamental plants. And now my question is the periwinkle in the woods, it's looking great, vibrant, nice and green. But, you know, the stuff that I put into the container, it doesn't. The leaves turn brown and they're kind of falling off pretty quickly.
Yep.
I just wondered if periwinkle is container friendly.
Do you have holes drilled in that container? Just curious, like some good drainage.
Oh, it does. Definitely has holes. It's got great drainage.
Okay,
it's a huge pot, about the size of a casket.
It's very different. It's very difficult to grow things in a container over the winter in this part of the world because they get exposed to an awful lot colder weather. Their roots are exposed to a lot colder weather.
I do put straw, bales of straw, around it to protect it somewhat.
Okay, so that
would
help.
That's good.
That would help.
Yeah, so there's no life now showing, no new green shoots coming out of the center of those periwinkle spots. Nothing.
No, I don't see any, no.
You have plenty on the bank, so you could just start over.
Start over.
Yep. Yeah, I know. But the third year, I started over, though.
Yeah. Well,
It's the winter that's doing it to you. Winter cold is freezing the roots a little bit too much.
It's hard to grow anything.
Maybe I better try something else.
Yeah. Good plan. Right. Hey, why don't you try a mole plant?
There you go.
Hey,
Carrie, thanks a lot for the call. Over to Marcia in Bearsville. Marcia, you're on.
Hi, gentlemen. Question. I live in a property that's got a, a woodland lawn, meaning it's certainly not sod. It's just whatever comes up in the middle of virgin pines in a cleared area. Yeah. And as you might imagine, there are tons and tons of dandelions, some years more than others. My property owner got this handy-dandy tool. It's a little like a pogo stick that pulls them out, which is kind of fun.
Yep.
Takes a lot of energy, though, and, of course, they're everywhere, and the root system is, you know, just goes underneath. But my question is, now that she's gotten this, and we've both gotten enthusiastic about trying to stay ahead of this a little bit, when they pull them out and pile them in the wheelbarrow afterwards, how do you dispose of these in such a way that they just don't take root someplace else?
Uh-huh. They make great compost.
Yeah, they won't re-root. They need, you know, to be in the ground with some soil. So I would just, as Fred said, just
let them dry out in the wheelbarrow.
Sure. No, I mean, yeah, if you have a compost pile,
they're also edible, aren't they?
No, there's no compost pile around here because then you invite all sorts of creatures with many legs. And
but you can make a compost pile just with vegetation, just with those plants you have and a few other plants. You don't have to put anything too enticing in there.
Yeah, and that would not
be in the wood. For instance, with the edge of the woodland.
Sure.
So if we put it just at the edge of the woodland and just pile it there, they won't take root and spread and what have you again back into the lawn?
No, they won't. You want to get them before they go to seed. I would say if you don't mind a flower, dandelions are a great plant. If you're, as long as you're not looking for that manicured lawn sort of look.
Well, that's not my problem. It's the property owner's problem. Okay, so in other words.
But yeah, just dump them over
I
the bank.
I know they're good to eat too, but I think she's tried various things that are probably less good for the environment than pulling them out, and I'd rather have them pulled out.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't be surprised
so,
if they.
Rather than pesticides, yeah.
I get you. Absolutely. Yeah, they won't resprout on you. So
if you leave just a little bit of root, they'll come back, so don't be surprised if they show up.
That's very clear because. Okay. Even with this thing, the root breaks a little bit when you pull them out. It can't be clean every time, and then you can see that there are lateral root systems going on and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, good luck, Marcia. We thank you. I kind of like the way they look.
Yep. You know, the record for a root, I think, on dandelion goes over 6 feet.
Wow.
That's a world record.
Who measures that?
6 foot down. Probably the person who grew it.
They didn't have enough to do.
Exactly. Speaking of that, let's go to line three. John in Albany, you're on.
Hi, yes. So I got a squirrel's nest in a tree in my backyard, and the squirrels are coming in, and they're eating all my plants. I was wondering if you had any remedies on how to stop them from doing this or getting rid of the squirrels.
So most of the time, squirrels don't bother plants too much except for maybe the fruit on your fruit tree. So your peaches or your plums can get bothered. I have not had any negative experiences with squirrels eating the actual plants.
Nope, sometimes they'll digging nip off those edges up. Of spruce.
Yeah, so a tree or something, is a little pruning.
But that doesn't hurt the tree too much.
But so what is it they're bothering?
So I have some violets back here and some herbs. And every time I wake up, they come up and just eat the plants on there or dig them up out of the roots.
Wow.
And you're there. Are you seeing the squirrels do it, or is there maybe rabbits or something?
That's what I was
going to
ask them.
No, I came outside and I saw a squirrel eating my violets.
Wow. Okay.
Maybe
do you think
it's the
mole plant
behavior on their part?
Yes.
The mole plant.
Mole plant is what he needs.
You could spray one of the repellents on there.
That's what I was going to suggest because, they typically don't like to do that, squirrels. So my guess is they're just poking
around.
It'll be
easy to discourage them.
It'll be easy to discourage them.
One of the rotten egg garlic combinations like that.
Yep. Yeah.
So any of the things labeled for like deer and rabbit, you could try that.
Yep. Rotten eggs work well with a little bit of like cayenne pepper mix in there. And sometimes a little sprinkle of like lemon juice and concoction. Most people don't like it. Most critters don't like it. And probably be pretty easy to get rid of the squirrels that
way. Okay. All right. Well, good luck, John. We appreciate that. And boy, we're racing through the calls here. 800-348-2551. We go to Brenda in Pine Plains. Brenda.
Yes, hello. I'm calling about I live in a wooded area. Lots of woody woods around my house. Lots of deer, and for some reason this winter, the deer decided to eat the pachysandra. I have a lot of pachysandra and a lot of myrtle, all kind of intermingled, and I'd say that they ate about 12 square feet of pachysandra. crushed it because they slept there too. So I'm just wondering, can I revive this, or do I have to just take up the little brown stubs that are left and replant all that pachysandra? They didn't eat the myrtle, but they ate the pachysandra.
So my first thought is that if it's still early and the pachysandra hasn't resprouted yet for the new year, and if they didn't uproot it, if they didn't pull it out of the ground, it very, very well may just start to grow back, look a little thinner there, but otherwise start to grow back.
I've even, in past years, gone over pachysandra with a lawnmower and mowed it right down, and it comes back. So I'd fertilize it, rake it out a little bit maybe, but I'll bet you it comes back.
Yeah, that'd be my guess as well. Just as long as, like Greg said, they didn't get your roots. You might have to, take a little piece here, take a little piece there to fill in a little spots here or there, but most of that I think will come back for you.
Oh, great. Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks, Brenda. We appreciate that. Yeah. This one came in via email from Teresa. I have my eyes on this beautiful bird cherry tree. It's blossoming currently with lovely, very fragrant white blossoms. Any idea where I could get one locally? I've asked a couple of local nurseries. They never heard of one. Researching online, can get it as a bare root. And appreciate your help with this. This is from Teresa. Bird cherry tree.
Yeah. Well, it's a native. It's a smaller ornamental. It has ornamental qualities, but it's not that commonly sold in nurseries. And you often find that kind of a plant online. I know that when we've planted that at the Arboretum in our native plant collection, we have had to actually go online to get it, and we ordered the bare root.
Yeah, natives are becoming more popular, but in the retail horticulture business, for years people would look at something native and say, well, gee, I don't want that. That grows wild around here.
That's it.
But that's changing.
That's changing. Yeah. But if you can get a bare root, this is a great time right now to deal with bare root. And bare root has its advantages. It's actually one of my favorite ways to install plants, but it has disadvantages. It has a very limited window of time that you could plant them, which is like spring or fall, and that time is coming up like literally right now. And you really want to make sure that you don't let those roots dry out. Keep the plants cool and dark, et cetera.
I agree with both.
Wow. All right, let's take a break then. On a happy note, 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Greg Ward and Fred Breglia and Bob Graves and you. It's The Gardening Show. We'll be back.
Support comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive kiosks, and commercial casework for special events, museum installations, and trade shows. EmpireExhibits.com. Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road Colony, locally owned seafood restaurant and raw bar, RealSeafoodCo.com. Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. Saratoga Jewish Community Arts presenting The Attack, the turmoil of an Israeli-Palestinian surgeon's life when a suicide bombing leaves 19 dead, including his wife, who is held responsible. May 15th, 7 p.m. at Temple Sinai, panel discussion and reception to follow. 518-584-8730. And the Hyde Collection, an art museum and historic house in Glens Falls, New York, open Tuesday through Saturday 10 to 5 and Sunday 12 to 5. HydeCollection.org.
Welcome back to Vox Pop. It's The Gardening Show. Ray Graff here along with Fred Breglia and Bob Graves and Greg Ward. And before we get to a few emails and then back to the phones, I know Fred Breglia, this is magic golden time over at the Landis Arboretum, and you have a few events.
We do. Yeah, we have our big upcoming annual spring plant book and bake sale coming up. It's going to be Saturday. This is going to be May 20 and 21, Saturday 10 to 4. We have a lot of native plants. We have a pretty good variety of organic, sometimes heirloom vegetables. And we have a great number of lilacs coming in there. Everything from perennials to annuals to trees to shrubs, you name it, cool. We've got it. Great book sale, great great used book sale and one of the best bake sales around. And in addition, this year we're actually going to be giving some free tours. Native plant tour will be with Ed Miller and me, and we're going to be doing that on Saturday at 2 p.m. and it's free. I'm also doing a presentation on ancient forests and champion trees. That'll also be Saturday at noon, also free. The entire event is free. No purchase necessary. Come get a free tour, get a free presentation. That is going to be May 20 and 21, coming up really soon. And the only other thing I'll mention really quickly is that if anyone is in the area tonight, I'm going to be doing a public presentation in the Schenectady Stockade District entitled Street Trees and How to Care for Them. And there's another free to the public presentations. And if you're interested in coming, it's going to start at 7 o'clock tonight. The location is St. George's Church on Ferry Street in the Stockade, parking in the lot on Green Street.
Well, perfect. And then you head over to the casino, you know, roll
you make
some
a
bones.
Night of it.
Yeah, I like it.
Hey, live large. What do they say? Live a lot.
Well, do something.
Do something.
Greg Ward, what's happening?
Well, every day is planting day at Ward's Nursery now. We're going at it quite aggressively. Cold weather vegetables, including things like celery, are something you could be planting now. You got to hold back on your tomatoes and peppers still till the end of the month. But the weather is looking really fantastic for any perennial tree shrub installation.
So this is
right
the
now.
Time.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That really that big blizzard. I mean, it was good for something, and that was to give us a trickle out.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
So my lingering back pain was worth something then.
That back pain was worth something after all.
What about you, Bob?
Well, we have a few upcoming events at go to fadigans.com to see what's coming up. But I agree with Greg. It's we're in the thick of it now. It's time to get out there and get your perennials and annuals and cold weather vegetables.
Get your spring on.
Get your spring.
Nice. our phone number here is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And we have a full bank of calls, but we'll take a couple of emails very quickly here and then back to the phones. This is from Ruben. What variety arborvitae would you recommend for a screen hedge 12 to 15 feet tall? Also, would American holly be an option? We live in zone 5. It's from Ruben.
Well, I wouldn't do the holly.
No, not American holly.
You got a lot of varieties of
the arborvitae. The most popular one these days is the Western arborvitae. It is Thuja placata.
Yep.
And the main reason for that is that it seems to be very deer resistant, whereas the more typical eastern variety, Occidentalis,
the dark American or the emerald green are just chewed up.
Yes, can be browsed by deer. So western arborvitae might be a good choice.
Okay, and this is from Kim. Lilac bush, when is the best time to trim them back, and how far back can you go?
You want to prune them right after they bloom, and unless it's something that's really, really tall and overgrown, in which case it would need a rejuvenation pruning, and that would be actually cutting it back kind of now, but you lose all your flowers for the year. But let's assume this shrub is in decent shape, and she just needs to do some maintenance pruning that's always done right after blooming.
All right, two more emails and then back to the phones. This is from Matt. My yard is pretty nice. I have nice green grass everywhere, but the area that is mostly shaded near my septic tank, in that area I have nothing but leafy small plants and no grass. Do you know the remedy that can allow grass to grow there instead of these small, dark green, leafy, ugly plants?
If it's shady, you're not going to grow grass.
More sun.
Basically. Okay. More sun is the answer. Yep.
Well, sometimes you can get more sun without removing any trees, though, by just limbing up lower branches, making proper pruning cuts, and you'd be surprised you could change the light level enough that now instead of like a dense shade, you're getting a filtered light, and a lot of things like filtered light, so it could be changed just with the removal of some lower limbs.
And then just some alternatives to grass that would not need mowing, some herbaceous ground covers, we could start naming them.
All right, so one more email and then back to the phones. This one's from Gene and Colony. We have pear trees that have not been pruned in many years. They have a lot of branches that just sprout up to the sky. Can I prune these now? And that's from Gene.
I'm assuming are they ornamental or are they edible pears? That's one unknown. If they're not really worried about the fruit, then the safe bet is you could wait till summer and do some selective summer pruning.
I bet you they're fruiting because of that description, shooting up to the sky. I pictured fruiting pears, not ornamental.
It could be, or I was thinking calorie, but
they tend to
branch out. That's
like
true.
That,
So you're kind of a little on the late side right now.
Okay, so don't do it now.
But summer pruning is fine on an edible pear. It's just that
an inedible pear?
Edible or inedible. Either way,
ornamental summer pruning, as opposed to edible. So
I got you.
Either way, summertime is good. You can't go wrong. The only issue is if you're planning to eat the pears, you're pruning them off as you go in the summer, so orchards often don't do that time. But if you're looking for structural pruning, it doesn't matter that much.
I would do it right now. I think if you're feeling like your tree is sort of overgrown and causing some, you know, just not going to get better, yep, I would go right at it and don't worry about the fruit.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. And Nikki in Albany. Nikki, you're on.
Oh. Yes, hi. I've been looking to plant a white birch clump tree in my yard, and I was looking last year, and every place I went, they either didn't have them or said, oh, those are very prone to a bore.
They
and,
are.
And, you know, why don't you just paint a tree, somebody told me.
Wouldn't do that.
No, we use the river birch more now than we do the white birch. The Europeans and the papers, the pepper, are pretty prone to that bronze.
So they're more like a salmon color, right?
That's correct. They're not white.
Yep, but you know, if you really wanted a striking white that was resistant to the bronze birch borer, the Asian white birch works really well, and it is resistant to the bronze birch borer, which is that pest that will threaten. And that is rare.
Do any of your nurseries carry them?
You guys carry
white,
Asian white? So we actually offer paper birch as well as the river birch that Bob was mentioning. We rarely offer the Asian one anymore, only because it's not as pretty as white birch, so it doesn't hold the white as long, especially when it's older. What we have found is the paper birch will work, especially if you plant small ones and you're very good at keeping them well hydrated for the first number of years. Yes, though, when it's 40 feet tall and mature and settling in, the borers could move in, and so the tree could have a shorter life. But initially, it's not too difficult to get them to take and do what you want to do. So I have two in my front yard right now. They've been there probably 25 years. They were both beautiful for many, many years. One is still fantastic. One is starting to succumb.
And it's really true that if they get dry, if there's a dry season, if they're not well hydrated, it makes the borer much more of a problem.
Uh-huh. Yeah, if it's stressed, stress in general, drought is going to do that.
Drought
does make them really prone.
Jim in Albany. Jim, you're on.
Hi. I'm calling about my climbing roses that I bought them 2 years ago. And when should I fertilize them, and what should I use to fertilize them? And do you suggest using fish scraps, like the heads and tails of fish, to fertilize roses?
Well, you could. It might be a little smelly.
Yeah.
But you could. I have heard that rose fertilizer is often there are fertilizers that have the word, you know, rose food on them, and those are probably what we would all recommend. That said, any general purpose fertilizer for the garden is probably going to work out just as well. Applying that now is a great thing to do. Sometimes Epsom salts will be an additional thing you can add to beef up the potassium.
They are heavy feeders.
Calcium,
it's good to feed them.
Magnesium as well for the for the Epsom salt.
If you're going to use scraps, though, you want I'd bury them. You may end up with some animals.
I was going to say that as a fisherman here.
I'd be careful of that.
I would advocate that.
That was a Native American practice.
It was, and it works. The issue is, and I've actually tried this in different locations just as an experimental, because I do catch fish. We eat fish, but I've had things dug up on me quite good, and some pretty. And sometimes they think there's maybe more because the smell's there, so they keep digging, they overdig. So there's, I think you go with the organic rose food that's bagged and labeled for roses.
All right, Jim, thanks for that one. 800-348-2551. It's the Gardening Show with Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward. We go to Lindsay in Rosendale. Lindsay, you're on.
Hi, thanks for the call. I have a question about my vegetable garden. Last year, my kale was demolished by, I believe, cabbage worms. They're small green worms. And I'm wondering if there's anything I can do this year proactively to prevent that from happening.
Fred's
I didn't know if
they
were living in the ground or whatnot.
Fred knows what to do, and you just better sit back because this is disgusting.
I don't think we want to go the death.
No,
death
you don't want to do the death juice.
No,
no? Oh, okay.
Because
I take it back, Lindsay.
It probably would work. And where Ray is going with this is that it had to do with Japanese beetles and other pests that attack plants. You can pick those off and make a concoction in a blender that you plan to not use for food purposes ever again. And you throw the bugs in there, and you throw in some water, and you create this what they call death spray or death juice, and you spray them on those plants. And I know it works well with Japanese beetles. They'll smell their dead cousins and family, and they will definitely go away. It's you have to reapply, but I don't think you want to go that route. I mean,
no,
it would probably work.
I have a simpler one.
I think you got a simpler method.
I think
here.
I do. Correct. So it's those are cabbage moth larvae, caterpillars, yep. And cabbage moths are those white moths that are flying around your garden, you know, often, especially
yep.
as we get to spring. So
yep.
And they're laying eggs. So I don't know how do you have an acre of kale? You have four plants.
No, I have a very, very small amount. I just
Great.
Have a small vegetable garden in my backyard, but I love it, and I eat it a lot, and they completely demolished my kale last year. They can eat it in one day.
So every morning, you go out and you pick them off. That's yep. the number one easiest thing to do. They are the same color as the leaf. They very well are on the underside of the leaf, but you'll get really good at finding them, and you just sort of pick them off, and if you did that once a day, you would probably not have really any damage.
Hmm. Yeah, virtually none.
The alternatives are some you can certainly do some sprays. The Bacillus thuringiensis, which is a little bacteria that infects anything in the moth family, and you dust or spray your plants with that, and it's organic, but you are putting bacteria on your kale. They'll infect the larvae and they will die. So you
will
have
the kale
that
be okay to
well.
Eat though?
Yeah.
If you do that,
sure,
yep.
It would be. Yep. But I think you know with just a few plants, you should easily be able to pick them. You know, if you have any Brussels sprouts or cabbage or broccoli, you should be picking them off of there as well.
Okay,
yeah, it's easily hand removed on small patches. But that's why you asked if it was a big field of this.
Right, it would take a long time.
That would have to be a different application.
In that case, I would recommend Uncle Fred's old time death spray.
Right? We might have to bring out the big guns.
Yeah. Let's go to Cindy in Plattekill. Cindy.
Hi, I have two quick questions. I'm wondering what is eating my tulips. They dig up the bulb. I put the bulb back in. They dig up the bulb. I put the bulb back in. Then they take the bulb away and they've obviously eaten it. My second question, you may have answered, but maybe not, because of the Western
Western
cedar.
Arborvitae, yep.
I need
cedar, yep.
Arborvitae, thank you. Yeah, yep. I'm looking for something that's bush-like, evergreen, somewhat deer-resistant, like 6-8 feet tall.
Yep.
So those are my two questions.
Yeah, well, okay. The deer-resistant shrub one, you could pick anything probably in the spruce family, and
okay.
Boxwood might be an option.
Boxwood would probably be an option. Yes. Because
6 or 8 feet is probably the problem. We can recommend things that will get taller and things that will stay shorter in a reasonable amount of time. But to just stay in that range, they're going to be slow to get to that range if you plant the smaller ones.
Yep, the hemlocks would probably work too. And they are not that prone to deer browse either. So,
and with pruning, you would be able to keep the larger ones at that size.
Yeah, not yews and not arborvitae and not rhododendrons. So
that's right.
They're
going
to shrink.
Right.
Except for western arborvitae. Yeah.
Western arborvitae, spruce, and definitely hemlocks would take shade. And there are some really slow-growing dwarf varieties that you could look up for hemlock that would keep you,
It's actually an arborvitae that we don't carry too often called Techne arborvitae. Yeah. It's a type of eastern arborvitae, type of occidentalis, that is pretty deer resistant as well. So Techne.
How do you spell that?
T-E-C-H-N-Y,
something like that. Yeah.
Okay,
and
great.
So they grow slower than the other arborvitae we were mentioning.
Do you see anything digging up the tulips? Is it squirrels?
I think it's squirrels, but it wouldn't be a chipmunk, would it? I definitely have both.
Could be.
It could be.
I'm just not sure.
So are you using any organic fertilizer when you plant the tulips?
In
the soil with them?
Sometimes I do. I use Epsoma, sometimes.
Epsoma,
that can be an attractant, and so sometimes animals are digging for that and just leave the tulips on the side after they've realized there's nothing, no fish tails in there.
Right.
And if they're taking them away, that's a problem, and it could be chipmunks.
There are some granular repellents again that are a combination of castor oil or rotten egg or things of that sort that you could sprinkle around to discourage them.
And another good tip too,
is
every time you plant the tulip bulbs and things like that, install a little cayenne pepper in the hole with you.
Yeah. Really?
And absolutely guaranteed
to. Oh, yeah.
That does only work does for 1 year, work? So you would have to reapply it.
And if you're going to fertilize, which is not a bad idea to do to your bulbs to keep them going every year, just wait until spring. Don't apply them to the newly planted bulbs in the fall. Apply it after they emerge in the spring.
And this is a great time across the board to fertilize just about everything. Roots are gathering right now.
Exactly. That was my thought. Spring, give everybody some get up and go.
Right now, trees, shrubs, perennials, you name it.
So cayenne pepper can be mixed in almost all the time that you do this?
Well, when I do it, I just throw a little bit in the bottom of the hole and a little bit of soil and then put your bulb right in. But
And what critters say, I don't care, I like cayenne pepper?
You know, I've never seen a tulip bulb eaten with that method applied.
There's actually bird seed offered that's been mixed with a little pepper. And that's apparently, you should ask Rich this to be sure, but apparently the birds don't taste the pepper or are not bothered
by
the pepper.
I've heard that, yes.
But mammals, or specifically squirrels, are bothered by it.
They like a little bit of that Cajun spice or that the birds, perhaps.
Maybe. That's it.
Very, very interesting. Over to Lynn in North Greenbush. Lynn.
Hi, good afternoon. I was hoping that you could tell me how to save some azalea bushes that I planted in the fall. It appears that deer have eaten them a little bit on the top, and they're looking very brown and definitely not green.
Yep.
There's a few green things, and I'm hoping maybe I can trim them back and they'll come over back during the year.
You know,
the
good times they will.
Yeah, the good news is I wouldn't actually do anything yet. I'd leave them all alone. They're almost guaranteed to come back. I've had rhododendrons eaten and azaleas eaten right down to no leaves. The timing of when they eat them, which is in the middle of winter, the plant has already secured enough food to do the re-leaf out.
Oh, yeah.
So if they ate them after they just recently leafed out, that would be really detrimental. But by then, they've got enough food sources elsewhere, and they're not going to bother you. So just leave them alone. It would be a good idea to put down some organic fertilizer or something like Espoma, Hollytone, or any of those kind of
products. And it's going to take weeks. Don't get impatient.
Yeah, don't
it's
get impatient.
Take a while.
You won't have flowers most likely this year.
I was thinking years that it might take for them to come back.
No, you'll get them this year.
Right now. Mid-June, they'll probably look nice.
This year. You'll get them back this year.
Thank you so much. Really glad to hear that.
Thanks, Lynn. We appreciate the
call. No flowers, though.
800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We will take a short break here, and then we'll be back for the home stretch on The Gardening Show with Fred, Greg, and Bob and you.
Support comes from Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Dairy and No Moo dairy free, handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more. Harolds.com. Adams Fair Acre Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Trees, shrubs, blooming perennials, Adams grown annuals and bedding plants, gardening supplies, and advice. AdamsFarms.com. George Heigel Antiques, Ballston Spa, New York. Offering estate sale services including management, appraisals, and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses. 518-396-7974. Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York. Working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost 3 decades. ShannonRose.com. And Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, announcing annual spring open house May 6th and 7th, featuring flowers, seeds, and more. Open Monday through Saturday, 8 to 4:30, Sundays 9 to 4. StoriesNursery.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's The Gardening Show. Man, oh man, it's a popular program. We have a full bank of calls right now. We have a stack of emails here. So let's make this the lightning round.
You got it.
All right, gentlemen, we'll try to answer the questions as quickly as we can.
Let's do it.
All right, so here we go. This one came in from Cherry in Millbrook. When's the best time to cut back hydrangeas?
Depends on which one.
Yep.
The fall, summer blooming ones, late summer blooming ones right now, and the blue and pink ones never.
Oh, and a great website, All Hydrangeas. It's called hydrangeas.com.
Hydrangeas? And it's like Duran Duran.
You got it. Only hydrangea, hydrangea.
All right, fair enough.
Fantastic.
This
site.
One's from Maeve. Can you tell me the difference between pruning raspberry and pruning blackberry bushes?
You do them the same way.
Same thing.
Okay. Wow, that was quick. This one's from Genevieve. I'm interested in planting my front yard, now grass, with native plants and grasses. I have good sun, at least partial sun in most places. One issue is on one side of my house is a black walnut tree. Any suggestions and advice appreciated?
There are lists of plants that are not affected or less affected by the black walnut issue. So I would go and look
those Google
up.
That. You'll get it real quick.
Okay. Yep. This one's from Ellen. I have a yellow wood planted about 8 years ago on which I wish I had done some corrective pruning early on. Now the problems are clear and I'm ready to do it. But the question is when. It has never bloomed. So pruning after blooming doesn't help, although I could do it after the July period when it should be blooming, I suppose. Right now it's running sap. I'm hoping the pruning might boost the blooming. Also, it's about 12 to 15 feet tall. Yeah. Yellow wood.
10 to 15 feet tall. That's probably not too late, but to do corrective structural pruning. Structural pruning on that plant I would do either summertime, like we're talking middle of June to beginning of August, or dormant season, middle of winter.
November,
both of
December.
Those are going to work. Yep.
Okay.
And if you have questions, go to our website, landisarboretum.org. Look for the link. Trees are good. They'll talk about structural pruning on there.
And I have found that they bloom late. Yellowwoods often don't bloom until they're well established.
Yeah, they also don't bloom until, like, a lot of times in the middle of summer when nothing else is in bloom, which is one of the things that makes them really nice.
It is also, you're right, late June, first of July.
Yeah, it's a late bloomer.
All right, over to Brian in Clinton Falls. Brian, you're on. Or not.
I'm in Trenton Falls, so I assume maybe I'm the Brian you're talking about.
Trenton Falls. Okay, it said Clinton Falls here, but I'll take your word for it, Brian.
Okay, Trenton. Yes, hi, how are you? Two questions. Is there an effective organic weed and feed on the market? That's number one. And number two, we have a woodland area, too, and our grass has an abundance of moss. I happen to love the moss carpet. My wife despises it. So the question is there some way to treat the lawn and strike a balance so that maybe the treatment's going to emphasize more of the grass and less the moss?
Well, moss is typically a symptom of some other problem. It's too much shade, too wet, a lousy pH, or poor soil, or a combination of all of the above.
So, yep.
The moss is a symptom, not a cause. It grows because the grass can't. And in terms of an organic weed and feed, I don't think there's much out there.
The only thing that's offered is a pre-emergent weed control. So what it does is you apply it now, and any seeds that try to germinate will not germinate. So if you have crabgrass or if you have dandelion seeds, they will not germinate. But there's nothing out there that's going to work in the lawn as a post-emergent, something that you can apply to the actual plants that are there now.
The pre-emergent is corn gluten, and it's sold in a lot of different companies, but you got to apply it over multiple years because, as Greg said, it's killing the seeds, not the plant. So you wind the population down.
So physically removing those weeds with a tool or two is what's recommended.
Another thing you can do with those established weeds in the lawn, and you don't want to dig them, you can actually spray them with an organic type of agricultural grade vinegar, and it'll burn them up. And it's not going to.
But it'll kill any grass.
It will. I was going to say it ends up leaving these spots wherever you spray it, but the grass will quickly fill that area right in.
There is a selective concoction out now for small areas.
And some people say it's fun.
It's an iron product.
What about the application of lime? Someone said that could.
Only if you need it.
Yeah,
the problem with
mosses is there are mosses that grow both in acidic conditions and basic conditions. So lime on its own, the lawn does like a higher pH. So if you do a soil test and it's saying 5.5 or something, yes, lime would help the grass grow better.
We often find that the pH is too high in our area that you got to bring it down. Mm-hmm. So you got to check it first.
Yeah, when in doubt, just take the soil, a random sample to either a local cooperative extension agent and have it either done there or sent to Cornell University for a more elaborate test. But either way, you'll know and be able to move forward.
Let's go to Gail in Germantown. Gail, you're on.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about fertilizer for acid-loving shrubs like a rhododendron, holly, a yew hedge.
Yep. I've always liked hollytone personally, but you really should, if you're not sure your pH, maybe check the pH first, just because
the only difference between the fertilizers is that the acidic or the ones for acidic soil or for plants generally has a little more sulfur in it.
It has more sulfur.
So anything that says evergreen food or hollytone or something like that would work.
But I do, hollytone, you suggest?
Hollytone is just one of.
Oh,
Halitone is just one of many. Evergreen foods, but they contain sulfur, and it's more longer lasting. Like if you got something that said mir acid or any of those other kind of soluble products, it's a very short time span in the ground. In a container, those solubles work quite well. But I would tell you to check the pH, because if your pH is already low and you're starting to add sulfur, now you might get that pH even too low, in which case you might not need the acidifying fertilizer. So get a pH test when in doubt. But otherwise, I think we would all agree an organic fertilizer that is complete, containing micronutrients and trace elements and sulfur.
You. Thanks, Gail. We appreciate the call. And over to Lisa in Glens Falls. Lisa.
Hi. I'm calling because I have a problem with red lily beetles.
Oh, boy.
And I was wondering if there's anything besides just picking them off and killing them, because I'm in my third year and I keep losing.
If you're thinking of an insecticide, the organic one is a active ingredient spinosad is basically a fermented fungi that apparently has some kind of insecticide quality, but it's organic. It's short-lived. It's something that you could apply in your garden, probably feel pretty good about. You would need to apply it regularly.
Yeah, I've also seen neem oil as one.
Neem oil?
Neem,
N-E-E-M. Neem oil, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Because I think the neem oil usually is in with something else that might not be,
you can get it both ways. You can get it both ways.
Okay.
Still maybe spending a little time collecting, especially initially those adults as they show up now.
Oh, my God, yes. I even have my six-year-old working.
Well, good luck, Lisa.
She knows what to look for as we walk by. Cause
there you go.
Part of my garden is lots of lilies, and we're losing. So.
Yep. Young horticulturist in the making.
Well, I hope you win. Lisa, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. And it's time for Linda in Albany. Linda.
Oh, hi. Thanks. I'm calling because I planted two small cypress shrubs about 6 or 7 years ago. They have the lemon. They're called lemon thread. They're yellow.
Yep.
The fronds are yellow.
Yep.
After about a year and a half to 2 years, all the yellow disappeared. I don't know. And both of them grew to enormous sizes. I beat them back all the time. They're not very attractive any longer. Does anyone know why they yellow would disappear?
Are they in full sun?
Yes, full sun all day long.
Wow, because usually that happens when they're in some shade.
That usually happens with shade. That was my first thought.
There are various selections. Some are stronger than others in terms of retaining that yellow. The yellow is brightest with new growth usually. So as the new growth comes out, you get the yellow, and then some of the varieties fade green, and so you may have this one of those varieties, it sounds like, as well.
Hmm.
Does it look better in the spring?
No, they don't look good at all.
if you're pruning them so you get a lot of growth, fertilizing them so you get a lot of new growth can give you that, more yellow to look at for that that window that I'm talking about, which would really be sort of late May through June, kind of would be the bright window of yellow.
Yep.
But they will, probably always be green for fall and winter.
Yep. There are certain varieties that never lose the yellow as well, but I do tend to think, since you said full sun, that's usually shade is the one thing that makes those pure yellow ones go green. But if you're getting full sun, I think you probably have one of those varieties that, like Greg said, puts out a lot of yellow growth and then probably starts to fade off.
All right. Maddie and Beckett. Maddie, you're on.
Hi. I'm wondering if there is any hope for my honeysuckle. I have had it. It's been beautiful for years in the past, and every year I seem to be losing more and more blossoms, and now I have basically just stalks. It's wrapped around my railing walking up to the house, and I have like two little groups of leaves right now, and it looks like it's dead. Is there any hope for it?
So this is a vine, honeysuckle vine,
yes.
Right?
Yes, it is.
And
go ahead.
Well, they're just emerging now, so just having a little cluster of leaves, hopefully several little clusters of leaves on the vine, is not unreasonable.
You can rejuvenate those by trimming them back severely. You'd need to, severely.
So you know, a third or so, if you wanted to take a third right off the top and then allow it to start over again. And we've been talking a lot about fertilizer, and that would help push that new growth as in addition to the pruning.
And that timing would be now for the rejuvenation, and if you were going that direction with
it. And they bloom on new wood. So by cutting it back and getting it to start over again, you actually can improve
get
the
more.
Bloom.
Yep.
Oh, that's great. So they grow on new wood. But how about all these dead stocks?
Well, you can also
go.
You also might want to make sure that if the plant's installed too deep, things will never do that good, and eventually the long term will lose the battle. So you might think about looking around the base of it. If you've got a lot of mulch piled up all over the stem, what I call the volcano mulch syndrome, where people sort of pile that mulch around stems of plants thinking they're doing good. They actually rot a lot of the the crowns where they sort of come out of the ground. That part of the tree or plant wants to be dry. I mean, we don't know those cultural things. So there could be other factors that are making this thing slowly decline.
But if it's large and has been established, growing for a while, there is dead wood in there. It's just natural part of the cycle. So you do want to remove that as you're pruning it back.
Yeah, all dead wood can be removed any time of year.
All right, let's go to Patty in Saratoga Springs. Patty, you're on.
Hi there. I listen to your show all the time. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
It's kind of a basic question. I have daylilies and black-eyed Susans all along this fence. And now they're just kind of grouping together, and all I have is big green. And I'm just wondering, to thin it, what would be the best time of year to do that?
You can still do it right now. Both of those things would recover, and you know, certainly the black-eyed Susans would recover and do great things, because that's a July-August bloom. The daylilies, you know, if you replant large clumps, then they'll all bud up and flower as well right now.
And I can do it now. Okay,
otherwise, you can renovate the daylilies after they bloom, you know, and the rubeckia or the you know, the coneflower right
now. If you're
going
to do it now, get on it.
Okay.
Yeah. Do it quick.
Otherwise, daylilies you could do in summer after they bloom.
Janet in New Paltz. Did I hit the button? Now I'll do it. Janet in New Paltz, you're on.
Hello. I have a dogwood tree that I planted last spring. It's been doing well. It's got lots of buds on it. What I did in the fall was I mulched it with leaves from the yard, piled them high, and most of them have broken down over the winter. And do I need to fertilize it more now?
You could hit it with a little bit of organic fertilizer right now. It's a newly established plant, so typically when you first put it in the first year, I don't use a lot of fertilizer, but that second year, so now this spring is an optimal time. And usually the goal with a small tree is you want to make it big. It's like giving kids calcium. You want to make them big. But when they get big, you don't really want to make them bigger, and then the nutritional goals change. So this is a great time of year to give it something like a balanced fertilizer. Make sure it's complete fertilizer with micronutrients and trace elements.
Michelle in Mount Tremper, you're on the gardening show.
Hi. I have a question about my very, very old white pines, and they're up in the Adirondacks, the southern Adirondack Park. And they got really beaten up a few weeks ago, or I should say maybe 6 weeks ago, by a really bad ice storm, and they lost a lot of their really big branches. I'm wondering, I remember my grandfather putting something on those wounds. Is there something good that I could put on that so that the tree doesn't die on me?
Well, you don't want to use any kind of wound dressings or pruning paints. Those have all been proven through research through the International Society of Arboriculture to not work, and actually it hurts. It's been proven to actually hurt or prevent sealing of wounds. But what you could do is actually do something called a crown clean. And that's where these broken branches are actually cut back to the good point where they can actually close over and seal. So you would be looking for probably an arborist to come in and do that work, but not pruning paints. This would be just proper pruning cuts to get rid of the broken branches and some of the dead branches. And those trees should be able to stay alive for a long time to go. So just look for a certified arborist in your area.
I think they're almost a couple hundred years old, that someone told me. Thank you
so
much.
They probably are.
Thanks,
I'm sure.
Michelle. We
some
appreciate
awesome
it. Quickly here in the waning moment or two, Jeff in Croton-on-Hudson. Jeff.
Hey, guys. How are you? Quick question. I planted some garlic bulbs last fall. They're coming up beautifully. I would say the shoots are maybe 8, 12 inches tall. When do you pick these?
So you won't. The first thing that will happen is you'll take the flower buds called scapes off of them. They'll start to form mid-June, so you'll get this little shoot off the center of the leaves, and it'll have a little head on it. Cut those and make some pesto out of those. And then about 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks later, usually mid-July, is the time to pull them up.
Okay. And do you hang them to dry them out, or do you just use them as they are?
You can use them right away, and then, or you just, you know, if you have a bunch, spread them out so they dry, and then store them in a cool, dark place.
Great. Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, Jeff. All right, very quickly, we only have about a minute. 1 minute for Mary in Kingston. Mary, you're on.
Thank you. I would just like to know, do you guys have any suggestions on how to keep cats away from using the shrubbery area where my husband puts the mulch for them to go to the bathroom?
There are some cat repellents, granulars that you can buy, but usually with animals, fencing is...
Are they your cats?
No, they're the neighbor's cats.
Is the kitty pee really a killer?
If the cat or dog continued to use the same spot, I did a consult many years ago for a tree. No one knew what it was, but it was a dog that just continuously urinated in the exact same spot.
I'll be
and
done.
Yes, it will slowly kill that plant.
Oh, okay.
Dogs kill lawns pretty regularly.
Yeah. Do they?
I can't. Yeah. One sex over the other is more acidic, and you can get little spots. I'll
be darned. Which
one?
Yeah. I'm sure there are hilarious jokes involved.
However, I
was going to say plant a dog with a bad joke.
So fences are the way to keep kitties from shrubs.
Yeah, that's a definite.
Okay.
All right. Well, Mary, you're the last one today. All right, Fred, how do we find out about the Landis Arboretum?
www.landisarboretum.org.
Greg Ward, Ward's Nursery.
Yeah, wardsnursery.com.
Fadigan'sNursery.com.
You didn't even let me say Bob.
I'm trying to do your job for you.
Fadigan'sNursery.com. All right. Well, you guys are all good. That was an exciting show today.
Great show. Great show.
A lot of fast-paced action here today. Thank you for the mole plant.
You're welcome.
Planted in the front yard.
Yes. And then we'll be able to talk about it again later.
We'll see if it works all summer.
We'll see. Maybe it'll keep the neighbors away, too. That'll be great. Support comes from Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. Edith-Hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts. Locally owned for over 50 years, offering annuals, perennials, nursery stock, organic fertilizer, and advice. HadleyGardenCenter.com. Colby Attorney Service, corporate formations, document retrieval services, court filings, and legal publishing for the legal and professional community since 1939. ColbyService.com. And Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org for more information. Thanks again to Fred, Bob, and Greg for being here. Thanks to you. And I'm sorry if we didn't get to your call. We had so many of them today, but we did our best. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who also did his best. And, you know, tolerably well, right, guys? Pretty good, yeah? Our producer is Jim Lavoulis, and your phones were answered by Deb Malik. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's a Food Friday, and we'll welcome a personal chef, Mary Kenny, into the studio. Right now, though, stand by for news.